This past week, when I was looking at my phone in the morning, I noticed that there was a link to News of Germany, is what it was called. And when I see that, it attracts my attention, because we all know the prophecies concerning the future and Germany and the European Union. So I thought, well, I'll just open that up. I actually sent it to my computer, and I got to my computer before it went down. But I opened that up, and I noticed that there were about 10 or 12 different messages about, or links actually, to Germany on different topics, which was very interesting. And then also I noticed in the Times of Israel, which I also saw perhaps on a different day, that there was an article about, well, Israel. That makes sense, doesn't it? Times of Israel. And I noticed a little bit of what was going on there. I think probably some of us may have noticed that there was a change in the prime minister of Israel at the end of December. And it's quite a back and forth with the militants or the conservatives, I guess we'd call them. That might even be a better term. And then those who are a little bit more liberal, basically liberal towards the Palestinians. So when I saw that, I opened that up and then got a little bit of more information. Sometimes you have to seek a little bit more knowledge about what is being talked about in one article so you can understand it. And then in all of that, I got to thinking, well, you know, things are really warming up, because when you read those articles and the links of what's going on over there, it's like, you know, we know prophecy like no one else, and we know that the average person is not really too interested in what's going on. The Ukrainian war even has dragged on now for a couple of years, and so it's like, it's old hack, and they're going to get through this, and we know Russia is going to be sending their missiles over, and Putin is maybe getting sick and is going to die, and in the Kremlin, if that doesn't happen, maybe somebody else is going to take over. So you just think, well, if you're in the world, it's same old, same old. The French hate the Dutch, the Germans hate the French, and I don't like anybody very much, or something like that. There was a song years ago that I remember that had kind of that tune. So the world just goes on. We're in the United States, and we're fine. But when you look at these articles and we know about the prophecies of the future, it really strikes us. And we think that things are really warming up. Now, as I give this sermon, we all realize that there can be a spike, you know, where we think, oh, things are really going to happen, it's getting close, and then all of a sudden you get this leveling back to norm, and there's nothing major happening, and things seem to get back to everyday life around the world. Everyday life meaning there's always mass shootings, there's always individuals dying by the thousands in certain areas like Ethiopia. That's been one of those cities where there's been a lot of drought and problems. But the normal bad of the world is what we think. So I thought, well, you know, what I'm going to do is give a sermon on Israel, first of all. And the reason that I'm doing it in this order, that is, organizing the sermon in this order, is because it'll be about Israel, it's going to be about the beast, and it's going to be about the false prophet. And I won't give a lot of scriptures in the beginning. You'll see that I save those till maybe about halfway through the sermon. And I'll try not to read too much. I'll kind of summarize some of these articles. But the reason I'm doing that is we know that Israel has been a problem. It's been a thorn in the flesh. In fact, we got the signs of the times, the prophetic trends in the news that comes out from headquarters about once a month. And a couple of those things were mentioned in there. I think they actually talked about what Zechariah says in Zechariah 12, where Jerusalem is basically a stumbling block to the entire world. And so we see then that what is going to cause the end time to come fairly quickly, and what that means, I'm not sure, but it'll be because of Israel. And what is happening in Israel on a regular basis, the Palestinian-Israeli issue. That is what's going to prompt the King of the North to come down and set up a peacekeeping force, maybe military operations would be the right word for that. In this case, as it is not with Ukraine, but then you have, of course, with the King of the North, the beast automatically you think of the problem that we're going to face, because we understand what's going to be going on in Israel. We understand what's going to happen with the King of the North and the King of the South. We understand that there's going to be a European Union that coalesces, that comes together and is a strong military unit. We understand all of that, and we're going to be watching, but that is not going to be our spiritual problem. So that's what I'm going to come to in the last part. That's not going to be our spiritual problem because, for example, with Adolf Hitler being one of the resurrections of the Roman Empire, I don't think anybody went out of the church because of what happened with the Nazis and with the attack in Europe. And what brought on, of course, a total war with the Second World War. Nobody, I think, went out of the church. In fact, probably people were closer to God. But what's going to happen with the end time is you have something different. And so the third phase that I'm going to be talking about is the one that is going to affect us the most spiritually, cause us the most problems. So let's start then with the Israelis and what's happening over there. First of all, a quote from Signs of the Times. This is from Jerusalem Post, and this is the one that comes out from headquarters. The world is at a transition point analogous to being on the verge of a cliff, after which a series of crises striking simultaneously will reorder the planet's geopolitics, the place of technology, the economic order, and a variety of other disciplines from, and then it gives a few other things. So it's right from Jerusalem, and they're predicting that we are now at the transition point, and we're on the precipice of a cliff. Now, when you read something like that, starting off, and that's the first paragraph of this Signs of the Times, you realize the world is, you know, thinking in a manner as we would think. They may be wrong in their timing. So we all understand that. They could be wrong in their timing, and the being on the verge of a cliff could be maybe we're 40 feet back, maybe we're 50 feet back. They have a world clock setting, I think, to the end of the age, and you see that being set closer and closer, and then all of a sudden, you'll see that it's set a few minutes back. How many of you are familiar with that world clock? Yeah, we see that from time to time, and I don't look for it on a daily basis, but I just catch it sometimes when you see it in the news. So we realize then that there is a problem, and it goes on to say in the commentary, unexpected events such as the arrival of COVID, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, caused major and expected upheaval in a very short period of time. So what we're saying here is that certain wars, certain epidemics, whatever, could cause time to, we say, speed up. Well, nothing's going to speed up. Everything's going to go as God wishes. The end time, I don't think, is going to be caused, especially because the church is lax. Because there have been some ministers who predicted the end, and it's like, this is going to happen. And then it doesn't happen. They actually predict a date. Now, we did set 72, at least in some people's minds, but I remember in 69 where it was like, you know, I remember reading from headquarters, you know, 72, it doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it. And so, and now some ministers probably kept preaching, yes, 72. They may have thought that because things can happen fast. But overall, from headquarters, I remember in 69, 70, it's like, it doesn't look like it. So we can get caught up in that. I'm not saying we can't, but we realize that there are certain situations that will bring on the end. So here you can have, and an invasion that seems to speed up time toward the end, and it doesn't happen. But we do see what happened this last time with COVID, more so, I think, with the war in Ukraine. We do see that there was something major that took place. Absolutely was. So it goes on to say here that Jesus Christ in his prophetic writing said, quote, "But these things I have told you, that when the time comes, you may remember that I told you of them." And that's a quote from John 16 and verse 4. So we realize then that these events were prophesied. Now, with what's going on in Israel, we see that Israel did something that really caused a huge stir in other countries, NATO countries, and maybe in quite a few countries that are connected closely with Israel and are worried about what is taking place. So it talks about a judicial change in Israel. I could go on with a little bit more of this here, Signs of the Times, about the bloodiest year in Israel since 2005. And then also a new Israeli government may allow Jews to pray openly on the Temple Mount, a new Israeli government. So basically what happened was at the end of December, you had an election, and this lamb that we're used to hearing about, Netanyahu, the one who is so peace-loving and wants to, you know, come up with a two-state solution. By the way, this is tongue-in-cheek. This is not what they want. The two-state solution, Netanyahu got in there, and he is a very strong Orthodox Jew. And also, he's very conservative. He's not liberal with the Palestinians. He does not let them get away with anything if he possibly can. So he came into power at the end of December. And then he made his justice minister, it was, a man that he knew really well. He encouraged him, and I think he had been doing so all along, to change the judicial system. So before I read about a visit that Macron had with Netanyahu, that is Reuben and Judah, brothers met together. It is interesting that people in the world don't think about that at all, that two leaders of the tribes of Israel get together. But anyway, when Netanyahu was in power in the first week, the first couple of weeks, he decided that we're going to have a change in the judicial system. And this is why later on this meeting took place between Macron and Netanyahu, because of what happened. So we see here in, and I had to look this one up because I wanted to know a little bit more about the overhaul of the judicial system. So the justice minister has unveiled the new government's long-promised overhaul of the judicial system that aims to weaken the Supreme Court. Now, the background on that is there's a three-branch government in Israel, kind of like ours here in the United States. There's a Supreme Court, and there's no election process for the Supreme Court in Israel. Now, if you think I know a lot, I don't. I found out probably in the last 24 hours about a lot of this, last 48 hours. So it's not that I'm that up on all of these events and what's transpiring. What does happen is I'll know it today and I'll forget it tomorrow. You know, the second thing to go in older people is their memory. You can ask the question, what is the first thing? And the answer is, I forget. So do you get it? Okay. So again, it's not that all of us are aware of these things and are just students of governments of countries throughout the world. I'm certainly not. I had to look it up, and I had to look up what this judicial overhaul would be also. But basically, the Supreme Court is a liberal Supreme Court. That's the court that wanted to bring Netanyahu to court because of violation of the law. They thought that he was making money from being in government. So some say, well, that's why he wants to do it. But basically, it has to do with their liberal attitude toward the Palestinians. Supreme Court has said that the Israelis cannot set up outposts in Palestinian land. You have the Gaza Strip, which I had to familiarize myself with also. And then you have, and there's about almost 3 million Palestinians living in that strip. Basically, that's the West Bank, I should say. That's the West Bank. And then you have the Gaza Strip, which is Hamas. So I'll get that right here. So what we have then is right next door to the others who live in Israel is your neighboring enemies. And the Supreme Court has been really easy on them. I think when Netanyahu was in power, didn't they put up a wall also between the Gaza Strip, or at least maybe where Hamas is operating out of, because they wanted to protect themselves? Well, the previous prime minister has been liberal also, does not want to be that tough. The world thinks that a two-state system in Israel is what's going to bring peace. Remember, and Netanyahu says, no, I don't want that. So once he gets in power and establishes a judicial system that is going to be tough on the Palestinians, everyone else in the world, most countries in the world that are not really pro-Israeli, really get upset. And they think this is something that's going to cause major war in the Middle East, much worse than ever before. So basically, that's it on this article from, Associated Press in Jerusalem is where this one comes out of. You can look that up. But it was an article from the 4th of January, 2023. So you see then that the very strong Orthodox Jewish militant party, basically, of Israel is saying this Supreme Court was not elected, just like in the United States. It was not elected by the Israeli citizenship. Now, what that brought on is a meeting between Macron and Netanyahu just not too long ago. This is just a few days ago, basically. And where we're going with this again is Israel is beefing up its strength against the Palestinians. So he's that Palestinian. Basically, you got the land of Canaan, and they were left there, a lot of these tribes, a lot of these Ites, Jebusites, Hittites, and all the others, Canaanites, remember that? And when they were left there, it caused problems. And they would. They became slaves sometimes, but all the way back to the time that Israel came in and was established in Israel, you had the Palestinians, basically, who are causing problems, along with their brother Turkey, who's a little farther away, that's causing problems too. They're always going to be a thorn in their side. So this is what we're looking at, and what we see now is, let's get tough on the Palestinians and get them out. That would be the basic attitude, because the Palestinians don't think we belong here at all, especially Hamas. So you can see why there's this constant struggle over there, back and forth, and some of the Israelis just want to live in peace. Two-state solution, they really believe that would happen. And Prime Minister Netanyahu is like, no, we're not going to have it. So you see this meeting, and Macron is saying, hey, you know this judicial system that you're setting up? You need to be careful with that, because it's going to cause problems that you wish you never had. And say some say that it opens a crisis unprecedented since the birth of the state in 1948. This judicial branch being changed opens a crisis that is never before since 1948. This is going to cause more problems. So Macron Reuben is telling his brother Judah, there are problems. You have to change this. Judah, back down. Netanyahu, back down. So that's what we have going. And Netanyahu and all of this responded to Macron that the Supreme Court was becoming too intrusive and weakening economic development. And that's where he's going with us. And so to try to get everybody on his side, do you Israelis want a weaker economy? In actuality, it's about the Palestinians, isn't it? So I don't think I need to say too much more about that, but it says the Prime Minister's trip to Paris will be difficult for Saudis to accept agreement with you, is what Macron said. They will not make an agreement. I think Netanyahu knows that, and knows it, excuse me. Now, the question we have then in all of this is who's going to solve the problem of Israel? Because it is a problem, and it is heating up. It would be good if we all kind of kept an eye on what's happening in Israel, because they are the ones that are provoking the nations around them. Nobody likes the Israelis. They just don't like them at all. It's like, it's your fault. Most countries say, if you would just back down, if you would make peace with those people who hate you, they don't say it that way, if you'll make peace with them, everything is going to be okay. And you have some who know better, and of course, God is the one putting all of these people in charge or taking them out of office. He's the one who's doing that. So the question then is, who's going to take care of the problem? And the answer we already know is going to be the military operation against Jerusalem when the armies surround Jerusalem, Luke 21. That's the overview we have. Now, have we expected a king of the north? 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago, that we expected a king of the north at all? And the answer is, no, we didn't see anything rising like that. We saw a European Union that was soft overall, a European Union that, if anything, would back the Palestinians. That's what we've seen. So none of us have thought, well, this is getting close to the end time. And none of us want this, cry wolf, wolf. We don't want to get back to a mode where the end is coming. For those of us who are older, the end is coming. Maybe tomorrow, maybe 2 days, maybe 5 days from now. We know that. But from looking at prophecy, we have not really thought that it's that close. The European Union seem to even become weaker. But a couple years ago, almost 6 years ago, there was a man who was elected president of the United States, and his name was Donald Trump. I think all of you remember. Of course, you do. But when he came into office, he said, Germany, spend more money on military. That's what NATO says. You're supposed to spend, I think it's 2% of GDP, does that sound right, on military. If you will do that, you have to pay your own way. And some of you countries aren't paying for the United Nations, not just Germany, but Germany may have been one. So, and all of us are like saying, and all Americans are saying, yes, do your part. But why would you tell Germany, who was responsible, or which was responsible for two world wars, to spend more money on their economy? They are now the strongest military in all of Europe. So wouldn't you think, and the answer is, the Germans themselves are more sensitive to becoming a strong nation than the other NATO countries around them. The other NATO countries aren't worried, but half of the German citizens, in fact, probably 52, 54, 56%, do not want Germany to become strong. They don't. Part of it is because they've been blessed with a very good economy by not spending all that money on military. And yet they certainly do have a lot of absolute exceptional military equipment. That's why they wanted the Tiger IIs. The Sherman tanks, I don't think it's the Sherman tanks anymore, but the tanks we're sending over there are not as good as what the Germans have. So we have a couple articles here, And one is about Putin. Did you know that Scholz, who's the Chancellor of Germany, and the Russian President Putin talked in December, and it was over the Tiger II tanks. Now, I didn't think too much about it when I read about the Tiger II tanks going to Ukraine. I didn't think there'd be any problems that would spark any more volatility, I guess we would say, in that area than already had been sparked. I didn't think that way, but as it turned out, there's something happened with Putin. Putin seems to want to negotiate. Scholz is one who is not as concerned about Ukraine having its own government, although he says, and he knows that they have to, and he's telling Russia to back down, pull their forces out. He's saying that. But there was something happened with the Tiger II tanks that the, after the sermon this morning, I was corrected in what I said about the Bundestag or the Bundestag, John Carmack said, Mr. Sergeant, is Bundestag or whatever, something like that. And I said, good, I'm glad you told me. I'll make sure and try to say it right this afternoon. The Bundestag is the House of Representatives, the Senate, so to speak, of the German government. And they end up, because of the strong position that Scholz had over this tank thing, in other words, President Biden, if you don't get on board and send some tanks, we're not going to send them. We are not. And he stood up to the President of the United States, which most people don't do. It's always been, and the Russians still think this way, that it's the United States that is running Europe. But what happened with the Tiger II? Now they're thinking, it looks like Scholz is going to be the one that's in control. In fact, what Scholz said with the tanks is, we will be coordinating basically the war in Ukraine. We are the ones that will be in control of these things. We are going to call the shots. And he did use some of those words about being in control. So they saw a fellow that had a little bit more steel in him, is what it says with the way he confronted President Biden. And President Biden is a man that we are to honor, not necessarily respect, but we have to honor the position. We all know that. But God has set President Biden in office to serve his purpose. He's put Scholz in his office to serve that purpose. Germany is becoming quite strong because of Brexit. They've had to take more control. They haven't wanted to in the past, but Brexit leaves, and they were very well respected. And then also France has lost its power. You see what's happening with the right-wing party over in France with the last election. And you have then Macron, who is not as strong. He's a little bit more liberal and is more pro-Palestinian. So you see these things happening. And I'm not saying that Germany is not pro-Palestinian. They are. They're going to come to the rescue of the Palestinians. But you see all of this building up now. And there's a few quotes in the article not read from a couple of these, but it's how Russia misread Germany's growing influence. This was from CNN at the end of January. And here it says that Vladimir Putin's failing invasion of Ukraine has become one of the most pressing political questions vexing the Kremlin. And when the Kremlin sees what Germany is doing, Putin and Scholz talk about sending these tanks in, and it's like Putin says, well, you got to back off. Well, naturally, he's got to back off, because what's going to happen? Tiger IIs are going to make a difference, I guess, in the war over there. But what happened in the Bundestag, I hope Mr. Carmack is listening. I didn't take German at all. I didn't take German at all. French took me, I suppose we would say. But he's over there, and some of the things that are said is, for example, Merkel was, this is the former chancellor, was the moral compass of Europe. Scholz has found unexpected metal in his ponderance. He is a stop-slash-go-slash-wait traffic-like governing coalition. But he won thunderous applause in Germany's government, I won't say the word again, on Wednesday as he flashed a rare moment of steely leadership. And brethren, remember in Isaiah 10 where it says that Assyria is going to be the rod of God's anger, but it is not in their heart to do so. Again, half of the Germans or more do not want war. With the tanks going in, some of the German community said, we're going to have to send personnel over there. We can't just teach them. We've got to run those tanks. Now, Scholz has said he's not going to send any jets over. He does not want that at all. So he is one who is going to want control. There's some other quotes here that I could mention, but basically there was a applause with his crafted speech in the Bundestag, bringing him with him a population typically averse to war, Now, in other words, he's pulling people in and more people are for the war. And then a subheading on this article too, Berlin wants hands on the controls. He wants hands on the controls. And I already mentioned what that was about. So we take a look at that and we see that Germany is quite a country. They've had transformation from the end of World War II of being a very, a country that doesn't want power. They did not want power. The book that I told you about, Germany and the European Union, Germany being a reluctant leader, is what I'll say. They use the word hegemon. But there's a chapter in this book, I think this is like the 32nd book in the series, but there's a chapter in this book that talks about the transformation of Germany into a leadership position. It's chapter 7, and I'll go there and just speak to that just a little bit, but it's on the political dwarf, meaning Germany, a political dwarf to potential leadership, German foreign policy in transition. And it has different chapters or different sections on that, but on page 233, it gives the conclusion of that chapter. And it says here the following: this chapter has charted Germany's transformation as a foreign policy actor in Europe. And a lot of that started again with Brexit, where they became really strong, and then with France and the problems that they had with, there's a word for it, something politic in Europe through the removal of discriminatory provisions culminating in German unity, 1989, you remember that, and a steady accretion of hard and soft power. Meaning Germany can be tough, then it can be soft. Alongside these structural changes, Germany has greatly increased its agency through, meaning its involvement, through participation in European foreign policy and through a series of emancipatory foreign policy steps from Ostpolitik, that was the word I was looking for, through to the Iraq crisis. So transformation, political dwarf to now, we want to be in control. That's Norwegian for German. But you get the point in all of this. We do want control. We will take control. And the very last sentence of this section on the conclusion says the following. I'll read the last two sentences. This is far from certain to given the absence of compulsory requirements and the German preference for inclusivity, meaning we don't want to... we don't want to be alone in all of this, but they have a preference for that overall. It does not point in the direction of leadership. It says the most likely outcome, to paraphrase de Gaulle, And those of you born in 1880 will remember that name, I'm sure. De Gaulle said, "Germany is a future leader and always will be." And that's what we've been saying from the Bible, that there is a resurrection. Resurrection means a death of what? The Roman Empire, a death of the beast power that will come and go and come and go and come and go. It's a resurrection. In other words, it's gone. It's out of mind. Resurrection, it's coming back from the dead, basically. And the one country to take control will be Germany. So let's turn to Revelation 13, 1 through 10. Revelation 13, and verses 1 through 10. And we'll see here that God talks about a beast power that is coming. And now this is the beast power that we talk about, but it's going to be not the beast that we really are concerned about, the world will be, but it'll be the beast out of the earth a little bit later here in this chapter. So it says, I stood on the sand of the sea, Revelation 13 and verse 1, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. The beast which I saw was like a leopard, a bear, a lion, the dragon. Satan the devil gives power here to the beast. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. They worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. Now, of course, the world doesn't know that they're worshiping Satan the devil. They worship the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" Now, what's overlooked sometime is Revelation 17, because why is the beast so powerful? Well, it's the European Union. It is the 10 toes that we know about, but it's the European Union. It's more than one country. What is overlooked would be found in Revelation 17, verse 12. And probably you overlooked it, I've overlooked it, but it's something that is said here that brings to mind why the beast is going to be so powerful. Because the beast is not going to be alone, basically, but what happens? You will see here at the end of verse 17 that it has something to do with the harlot, the great harlot. Now, when you think of the great harlot, what does the harlot ride? There's a beast, and you have on top of it, it's the beast, right? I see it coming from some of your lips. So the beast is not totally in control of itself for a long time. It's being reined in. And I think there's maybe a statement in Second Thessalonians, excuse me, that there's some things that are not clear right now, but it will be clear in the future. False prophet is what it's talking about, and how God is restraining that false prophet. But basically, you see a woman, the harlot, riding the beast. So the great harlot is not the same as the beast. And then there is what in Revelation 17 and verse 12 and 13. The 10 horns. Okay, so you have a beast, you have 10 horns, you have the harlot. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who receive no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. So the beast is separate. And then you have the 10 kings that will give their power and authority to one main leader. And then in verse 16, the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate, naked, eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. What happens to the harlot that is reining in? It's like someone on a horse, and it's giddy up, and it gets up, and you say, whoa, and it slows down, and you use your reins to make it go to the left or to the right. Basically, the beast has been controlled with the ten horns. Those other 10 nations has been controlled by the harlot. You have that entity. And then you also have the false prophet. That's the fourth entity. But what you have is the ten horns destroy the harlot. It says, eater flesh, burner with fire. God has, in verse 17, put it into their heart to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind and to give their kingdoms, the 10 horns, to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. So we realize then, why can they make war? Who is back in chapter 13 and verse 4, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with the beast? And the question is, well, no one, because they're going to be so strong, nobody will. The 10 kings have joined them, and they're going to be, that is, the harlot is going to be out of the picture, and those entities are going to be together, and my phone is not going to be on anymore. So we see this then, and let's skip down here, because why is the world going to follow after the beast? Well, it's because of the beast out of the earth. Verse 11, I saw another beast. This is a false prophet coming out of the earth, and you'll see that it's the same entity as in 2 Thessalonians 2, where you have one coming along as if they are God, and they have all these miracles. And so you see here that there's a deception. Verse 13, he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. You can go to chapter 11 about the two witnesses and also what's going on with the entity that has fire coming out of their mouth. That'd be the two witnesses. And the other, the false one, bringing fire down from heaven. You'd think, oh, that can tell me right now, if one is bringing fire down from heaven, I'm going to follow them, because they're bringing fire down from heaven. They're like Elijah. I don't know how literal this is, but you can just think of what's going to happen in the future. Verse 14, he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. This is a religious power we see in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, as we come to some of the last scriptures here. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and relate it to the one who creates an image of a beast to performs all the miracles at the end time. So Paul, at the end of his first book, in chapter 5, is saying, we're not in the dark, we know what's going to happen, and we realize that before all of this takes place, the end time, we will understand what is transpiring. And then the Thessalonians thought, well, the end is really close. So that's why the second book in Thessalonians. Now, the first book was also comforting those people where they were losing loved ones, and this was unusual at that time. Like, somebody's going to die. We expect Christ to return before this. But that's how Paul ended his book to the Thessalonians. Chapter 2 of 2 Thessalonians, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you, verse 2, not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Now, it's interesting, as if from us. So there will be those who believe, make people believe that they are representatives of Jesus Christ. And Matthew 24 says, many will come in my name, saying that I am the Christ, that the Christ is the Christ. And then it says, going on here, in verse 4, it's a son of perdition, the man of sin, verse 3, the son of perdition. This is, by the way, that term perdition, son of perdition, is also a term of Judas Iscariot, was called the son of perdition, if you look that up, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So, religious, wouldn't you think? And he's going to perform miracles. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? Brethren, remember when Paul was going through Asia Minor and he came from Miletus to Ephesus? I know I've got that right because I looked it up this morning, by the way. So you have him, but he says, I warned you for 3 years. 3 years I warned you what was going to happen. And we had that scripture that is mentioned in Signs of the Times in John 6, where Christ said, I'm saying these things. Remember when it happens that I told you these things. But in verse 5, do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? And now you know what is restraining, that he may be revealed in his own time. So it's the purpose of God not to allow this to happen until God is ready for it. The mystery, so what restrains is that God restrains things. It's not because all of us are not spiritual enough for Jesus Christ to come. If it took the church to be spiritual enough for Christ to come, you certainly wouldn't have the seventh church as Laodicean, would you? And Christ is going to be coming during or at the end of that Laodicean period. So some of these men who come up with prophecies, it's like, you know, it's your fault, all of you. Sarah, it's your fault, you're not good enough. Mariah, Cheryl, Terry, do I dare mention family names? Marion, you're not spiritual enough, so it's your fault. I'm not wrong now. I was right. God was going to come yesterday. He's putting it off 2 weeks until you get better. That's not the way it is. And some people say that, you know, if we were more righteous, then Christ would come sooner. The mystery of lawlessness. So what is this all about then? The mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he's taken out of the way. The person restraining this until, or the being. And I haven't studied this one scripture well enough to know he who restrains, but perhaps the spirit world that we're talking about. And then the lawless one will be revealed. If you go to the book of John, it says in 1 John 2 that the Antichrist will come, but has already come. And then it talks in chapter 4 about the spirit of Antichrist, which is denying that Christ is come in the flesh, denying that Christ is in us, because it goes on to say in that place, he who's in us is stronger than he who's in them, talking about being able to overcome the evil one. The lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth. So it's talking about the end time, Christ coming. It's talking about the beast, false prophet, and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power and signs and wonders. That's talking about that second beast. And with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because, and let me just mention here, when I got that phone call, when my computer went down, you know what I did? I asked for somebody else because the first guy had this accent that I didn't trust. And so I asked for someone who has an English accent. And they said, wait a minute. Now I was hoping the person would hang up because usually they do. Like, and I was nice again. The guy said, okay, let me get you someone else. And so I waited for 15, 20 seconds. And then another man comes on with a little bit of an accent. He is really nice. Okay, set up the deception, okay? Don't hang up on the guy, because we want to milk this guy of everything he has. We'll give him his wife, but nothing else. You know, we want to deceive this guy. We want to get into the computer. We want to get his passwords. And so I'm talking to him. He is really nice. And I think, maybe this is true. Maybe it's okay. So I said, this number, is it a hack? He said, well, you see, it's not a hack, he said. He said, it's a number that we put on there, and it's for your security. And I thought, So I went to my computer, and he said, what I want you to do is I want you to, and I mentioned earlier about this little square, this little icon you have on your computer that is a shortcut that you use. And he said, but now this guy's nice. And it's like, I think I'm not being hacked. I think maybe I should do what he says. You know why? Deception. He was nice. And it melts you. When people are nice, doesn't it melt you? And the guy, even when I said, well, I'm going to check this number out, he said, oh, well, that's fine. Yeah, check us out. And I thought, he had a pleasant voice, a soothing voice. Well, he can't be bad, can he? Until he said, hit this icon in R. But even then, I was nice to him because I thought, well, you know, if it's true, I don't want to be too direct with him. And again, I don't get mean-spirited. I don't start cussing ever. We're not supposed to cuss. But I think most of us, you know, we are pretty short with people who are trying to hack us. But the deception was so strong just with his voice. Now, you can imagine if someone can be nice to you and start deceiving you just with the tone of their voice, just think if they produce miracles. And just think if you've got their men calling fire down from heaven, and these two witnesses couldn't possibly be from God because it's coming out of their mouth. Deception is a key, but you know you will not be deceived, because here's what it says in verse 10. All unrighteousness, deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth. When we love the truth, it's going to be very hard to be deceived, that they might be saved. So for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. Delusion will do it, but only if we are unrighteous. If we're living a life of unrighteousness, if we will sin, we certainly will. We will make mistakes. We're going to miss the mark. But if we practice sin and become calloused to God's law, that's going to be a problem, because we will be affected by that strong delusion, that they may all be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure. Okay, so it goes a little farther than just, making mistakes. Pleasure in unrighteousness. This is what we have to be careful of. That is what is going to get us, brethren. So we will see an Adolf Hitler-like person come along, and we will know the prophecies, and we're not going to be affected. But we sure can be affected by miracles. If you were living in the 60s, it was Oral Roberts banging people on the front of their head and falling backwards and they're healed. And that attracted people. And of course, most people saw through it. In the church, certainly we saw through it. But there's going to be a lot of miracles that really look like honest miracles. So last scripture that I have here is 2 Peter 3 and verse 14. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 14. And here it tells us, let's see, if 1 Peter is not going to work, okay, 2 Peter, let me just head forward a little bit. Therefore, beloved, looking forward to these things, looking forward to, and what's going to happen, and you see in the book of Peter, you have false teachers, you have the end of the age and what people are going to be like. You have the end time scenario. And so it's saying, when we see these things, be diligent to be found by him in peace, peace with one another, of course, without spot and blameless. We're not going to be affected. Be diligent to really strive to be blameless. We won't be totally blameless, you know, again, but overall, we will be living in peace. We will be without spots. They'll be very temporary if we have them spiritually, and we will be blameless. So I hope that helps us, and I hope we realize that even though this could be a spike in what seems to be heading very quickly toward the end time, on the other hand, it doesn't matter, because we still are going to be knowing what the framework is of policy, and we will be striving to be righteous so that we don't be or get caught up in this world, and with not just the beast power, but with the false prophet, who certainly could deceive us if we are unrighteous.